Want to discover leading strategies, share experiences, and connect with fellow consultancy leaders from companies like EY, PwC, or Porsche Consulting? Then join us in Munich for the Leaders in Consulting Conference on the 27th of June, a one-day event exclusively for consultancy leaders like you. Places are limited, so head to leadersinconsulting.com to claim your ticket now. That's leadersinconsulting as one word.com. See you there.
What are the core differences between winning public sector projects and clients and winning normal companies as clients?
So there's two main differences. One is frameworks and the other is lead time, decision-making time. So in the context of frameworks, UK government has very much moved towards a framework environment whereby you as a company have to be on a framework or partnered to a company that is on a framework in order to deliver into government. So you've got to do some real thinking ahead of time if you say want to deliver into the Home Office.
Welcome to the Leaders in Consulting podcast, the show that delivers cutting-edge insights from other leaders in consulting companies. If you want a summary of learnings from each episode, or you want to meet other consulting leaders at our monthly in-person meetups, head to leadersinconsulting.com and subscribe to our newsletter. Please note, you must be a partner or MD of a consulting company with at least 40 employees to be eligible to join our in-person meetups.
Today, David W. Lewis joins us. He is Chief Digital and Information Officer at BetterGov. David, welcome to our show.
Thank you, Sammy. I'm really excited to be here and talk with you today.
It's a pleasure. So tell me about your company. What are you doing?
So BetterGov is an organization specifically focused on public sector. And as one of those organizations specifically focused in that area, we are rapidly becoming a major player in the space. So we have a tendency to hit above our weight, and we really focus on ensuring that our clients are self-sufficient after a project is done, which is very different than a lot of our competition. So we focus on delivering cloud and technology transformation projects, specific to GDS, Government Digital Service Standards. And we've also got lots of experience in local government, social care, education, HR, and finance in general. Our main focus, though, and hence the public sector focus, is the end user and what is the best outcomes that we can give for our clients, our government departments, end users themselves. So that's our main focus.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's good to think that way, because all the government officials hopefully think in terms of what's best for the end user. No?
One would hope.
Very good. And what is your job at BetterGov?
As a Chief Digital and Information Officer, my role is both strategic and operational. So I kind of sit in the middle between what we as a client team and an organization commit to our customers, as well as ensuring that we can deliver said commitments to the customers. So I sit in that middle of the Venn diagram between what's going on in the outside world with our customers and what's happening on the inside. But that also gives me the opportunity to become a trusted partner with my key client stakeholders, because I'm not there to sell and I'm not particularly interested in selling. That is not my personal forte. My interest is the end user, as I mentioned, is what are the outcomes that we're trying to create for our end users? And that's my main focus in the role itself.
Mm-hmm. Very good. And can you give me a proxy of the size and growth of BetterGov?
So at the moment, BetterGov is around 60 consultants across central government and local government. And we have lots of activity coming up in the pipeline. So we are preparing for a 2 to 3x growth over the next 12 to 18 months.
Wow, that is a lot. Very good. I didn't know that it's like so lucrative to focus on the government sector. So kudos, yeah.
It is a challenging environment, as you and I have discussed, and I think we're going to talk about that a bit more later. We're primarily a UK-based organization, and our main density is in Wales and England. We do have some work in Scotland and an increasing pipeline in Scotland, as well as some work in Northern Ireland. Mm-hmm. And one of our founders is actually Australian and is currently based in Oz. And there is a very small footprint there as well.
Amazing. That's a big time difference. Interesting. What are the core differences between winning public sector projects and clients and winning clients with normal normal companies as clients?
Sure. So there's two main differences. One is frameworks, and the other is lead time, decision-making time. So in the context of frameworks, UK government has very much moved towards a framework environment whereby you as a company have to be on a framework or partnered to a company that is on a framework in order to deliver into government. So you've got to do some real thinking ahead of time. If you say want to deliver into the Home Office, you've got to understand and identify the frameworks themselves. Are they the right frameworks for you as a business? And do you have the capability to deliver that? And then there's a whole piece of work getting just onto the framework itself. So there's a huge amount of activity that needs to go into getting on frameworks. And there are literally hundreds of frameworks across UK central government, not even discussing local at the moment. And then once you're on a framework, there's actually no guarantee you're going to get any business. So specifically, you're going to be competing against other individual organizations that are on the framework. And they will be anywhere from small, medium-sized organizations all the way up to enterprises such as Cognizant or IBM or TCS. Mm-hmm. So there's another whole piece of work on the actual bidding process. So framework comes in, then a bidding process. And the last part of the bidding process is it takes quite a long time for government to make decisions. And you're kind of at the whim of what's going on politically with a capital P. So if you recall last year, there was a big kerfuffle as the prime ministers changed and essentially the UK economy nearly tanked, as you were probably aware. That stalled all of the framework purchasing processes at that time, and everything got pushed out at least a quarter. Mm-hmm. So you need to be prepared and have your organization prepared for a long lead time. Mm-hmm. In our context now as BetterGov, we're doing a large piece of work with a client to whom not at liberty to discuss at the moment. We had expected to start about 7 weeks ago, and we are still sorting through statements of work. I'm using that as an example.
Yeah, no, very good. So what would you say is the normal lead time from you participate in an RFP to you win the contract on average, or maybe form two compared to the outside world? Because you say it seems to be longer than if you...
It is considerably longer. And unfortunately, it's not something we can predict. So we had assumed in the example I just gave that this would actually be, once we won it, it would be very fast because that was all the buying signals that the client gave, excuse me.
Yeah.
But internal politics happen, external politics happen again. And I've had a 7 week lead time, which has helped means I'm holding resources, I'm holding staff ready to deliver this thing at my cost.
Yeah.
So again, back to lead time, I would, if you as an organization are not able to absorb 3 months as a rule of thumb in preparing for your delivery, it's not the right delivery. It's not the right bid for you.
That's a considerable investment, I would say, for any company, and especially for a mid or smaller sized boutique consultancy. Correct. Where you don't have 1,000 people and you can kind of leverage a little bit. Mm-hmm. And move people around. So how Correct. Do you manage that?
So that is the sunk cost you need to be aware of ahead of time. And in the context of many SMEs and ours as well, there is an associate model. So you actually do have staff available, but who are not directly on your books and your costs. Mm. But I do want to comment that it's the setup of a new win or a new contract that is the most challenging. Mm. And getting all the frameworks in place you need for the actual contract delivery, once that's done and you're on the books, and especially if you've got a runway for a variety of accessible projects, the SOW, the statements of work and related coming through, should be a lot faster. But obviously, there's no guarantees, as I was alluding to.
But that would have been my follow up question anyway. Now, so if it's so hard to get kickstarted and so expensive in the end to get the first foot in the door, why doing that? So what is the upside? And you just mentioned part of the upside, as far as I understood, that once you're in and you have a good relationship, the contract could expand or could go on much longer than in the original RFP. Did I understand right. that correctly?
You did. And it also goes into the relationships that you've built. If you genuinely built a trusted partnership relationship, then there is logically and almost certainly going to be more business follow through, even as you make yourself redundant in previous deliveries. So I've done my job, tied it in a bow, handed it back to the client. Client is very happy and we'll both pick up new work with that individual client, and or get referrals, whether that's within that same department or elsewhere. Again, it all depends on the intent and quality of your delivery. So if you're actually intending on mining, everyone can see that. And because everyone can see that, they're not going to build that trusted relationship. And it's the quality of your delivery. So if your quality is not stellar, then I would suggest that you might not want to bid into central government.
And by mining, you mean that you basically, like some consultants say, land and expand. You come in with a project, correct, and you try to grip to the customer and try to be there as many years as possible, correct, with whatever you can figure out, you can sell into the client.
Yeah, and I personally find that entire process distasteful because it takes away from the true trusted relationship that you can build with your individual clients, because they're always feeling like, what do you want from me? In my context and the organizations with whom I work, our focus is what is the best for you, the client. And if I do my job right, then there's logically going to be more business on the back end. But if I'm going in with what is a business I'm going to get in the back end, then the client can smell that. And again, the trusted relationship goes down a notch or two. Mm-hmm.
And to be honest, there, at least my outside in feeling is that there's no difference between government and normal corporate clients in this respect. I mean, everybody can sense it somehow if you want to just stick in there, and if you build a good relationship and they trust you, they will come to you with questions. Sure. Sometimes you can help with your service. Sometimes you can give some advice or refer to someone who can help. But in the end, that's probably what you meant with you build a trusted relationship, and that pays off in the long term.
Indeed. And also, I think in the government context, keeping the end user in mind, the citizen, the example I like using is a woman on benefits who's older and is probably digitally excluded to some degree. How do I make her life easiest as I possibly can? Am I thinking that through for that end user? So there's a different scope of the use cases you have in the context of government, because you're not just targeting the client, you're actually targeting the clients, end users or clients themselves. So I do think it's that big picture thinking and bringing a solutions approach and a systems approach to the client in order to service the citizen, for lack of terminology.
You know, what I like about it, that you can, as a consultant, you can have a big impact on the lives of the people in your country. I mean, depending on the project you have, but that is like pretty cool, I would assume.
And that's exactly why BetterGov, to be fair, there are a few other organizations that are specifically focused in this way, but that's why I align myself with an organization like BetterGov.
Yeah, very good. What do you like personally most about doing that kind of work?
I am a service-oriented individual, and I like the I need for myself as a person and a professional to know that the work I'm doing has a social value. So, for example, I've done lots of retail transformations. Is there any social value in that? No. So I don't have as much satisfaction as I get out of doing something that I know is going to have a direct impact on someone's ability to claim benefits or make their lives easier to get their driving license or getting a passport or whatever the challenging prospect is.
What is the coolest project in this area that you said, wow, that felt awesome because it had a really positive impact on the people that you did?
So it's not in the context of my current engagement, but I have been peripherally involved with a variety of HMRC programs that actually look at the entire organizational ecosystem of the country, from mom and pop selling something through to the hauliers and the exporters, and then going all the way out to delivery and understanding how customs needs to work, especially in the context in which we detached from the EU. Mm-hmm. That's a fascinating, very challenging environment. And to be fair to HMRC and central government, eventually they got there. It was very difficult in the beginning of that process. And there are still teething pains, as you're probably aware.
Yeah, very interesting. So if you would, so recently, to tell you a short story, recently, like, we have regular meetups here in Munich with consulting leaders, and one of them said in the introductory round that he has a problem bidding for a government contract with the German government. It was the first government contract they were bidding for, and it felt like it took ages, and he doesn't know how to position himself and his company in a way that increases the chances to win the contract. And with your experience, and I think governments, let's just assume it's more or less the same how people in governments act. What would be your top 1, 2, 3 advices for this person, maybe also experiences that you can share, so that someone who maybe is a greenhorn in this area and says, well, we somehow have the chance to participate because we have a unique ability that is needed. What advice would you give that person to in order to be successful?
Okay. Excuse me. So my first position on that is, how are you differentiating yourself? If you're going in and just bidding to what the client is asking for, there are so many other people who are doing that. So what is your equivalent of your special sauce? Is it attitudinal? Is it your own product set? What is it, something you're going to build, bring in addition to what the client is expecting? So basically, the client is going to expect a baseline that everyone will deliver. What are the value adds you're going to bring to that? So I would be very conscious about, I'm doing this for you, but I'm actually giving you this wider, wider value or wider approach. So I would focus on seeing how you can provide that special sauce, as I'm saying. So the other aspect of that is, there is a lot of work and value to be delivered from partnerships. So whether it's you as a smaller company or working with a larger company that doesn't have your capability and you're going in together, or you don't have a capability for something and you're pulling another organization through, and showing that as one team and one delivery. But there's a lot to be said about building an effective supplier and partner ecosystem that you can then deliver directly into the government and into your government client. And the third part of that is, I'll keep coming back to relationship. And in the part of process of bidding, sometimes that's very difficult because many clients deliberately push that away. So finding a way to navigate that without being obnoxious and getting yourself pushed down the range because you're being too pushy is a special capability, and often needs you to bring in some partners who know the environment, whether it's as an associate coming in to give you a guiding hand, or hiring in specific capabilities that affect. For most organizations that are starting up in this context, it's usually best to find associates who have a good, I'm showing my age here, but having a good Rolodex of people that they can reach out to in their client organization, and just kind of start giving good words.
Mm-hmm. Very good. A nice example came to mind when you said, have a good ecosystem of partners that you can work with in order to deliver good projects. I recently spoke to an Austrian managing director of a consultancy, and they just won the biggest government contract ever awarded in the history of Austria for a consultancy, so to say. Mm-hmm. So in total now, it started with 600 million. Now it's up to 1 billion. Of course, wow. They're not delivering everything themselves, but they are not like an EY or something. They are a 500-person company. But he built such an ecosystem over the last decade, basically. And he has trusted partners where he knows that for each piece where they are not experts, they have someone whom they trust and they can deliver. And this was the main reason why they basically outbid and won almost everyone else. So really, really interesting to see how this works in practice, what you just said. It's really cool.
It's deeply important. And most of the organizations, especially the small organizations, try to go it alone and don't realize how much that is damaging themselves and their brand by doing so.
Yeah. And I honestly must admit, in the beginning, like, we are a small company, 20 people, still very at the beginning of our journey. But I learned from my interviews, like here in the Leaders in Consulting show, that it's absolutely good and beneficial if you look out for partners who have expertise in fields where you're not an expert, because Even if you, like, you have to be honest to yourself, you cannot do everything, and you definitely right. cannot do everything good. So just mm-hmm. focus on the one, two areas where you want to be the expert, and market is big enough to become really big there. Right. And then get partners on board. Yeah. So it's also a mindset shift that sometimes maybe hinders owners of consultancies and saying, but maybe that's competition and I don't want to go in there. Mm-hmm. And the mindset shift, if you want to take it, you really have a different growth path if you do it right.
Absolutely. And also, especially if you're a small organization, why do you want to build all that capability when you know you've got other people who already know how to do it and you're going to go head to head with them eventually anyway? Why would you do that? Especially if you're on frameworks, they're going to need you to get into the market. So it is a really good win-win situation.
Yeah. And you also mentioned in our pre-interview that in order to build relationships with these government officials, one way that you use is also to attend networking events. Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you give us a heads-on example of what kind of events you usually attend to create relationships and how you do that in practice when you go to such an event?
Sure. I'm gonna preface this with that networking is not my particular strength. And the reason for that is I actually like leveraging relationships. So if I have a networking environment, my preference would be to go with someone who's already got a reason to speak with someone. I'm not a big fan of walking up to someone and trying to create a quasi relationship that will turn into to business. I'm not a big fan of that because it feels disingenuous. Now, there are some networking events in the UK, and I'm going to keep the name of the organization out of this, that essentially create a matchmaking service. So if you think of speed dating, mm-hmm. They actually say, here are the organizations that I have involved with the individuals associated. And each of these individuals' organizations want to build those relationships. And they will actually say, hey, Joe Bloggs and David Lewis, could you come and meet each other? And that might turn into something. But that's more honest because both parties are being very, very clear upfront and creating an environment where they both know that they need something from the other person, mm-hmm. as opposed to me going up and having essentially a human chat with someone with an intent. And that's where I have a problem. It's the conversation with intent rather than conversation as humans just communicating. Mm-hmm. So that's one piece of it. And then the other part of that is going into a networking environment without agenda and just, I'm David, this is what I do, blah, blah, blah. And people like working with people they like, right? So, and as you kind of have those conversations, some of those turn into something, some of them don't. So that's how I approach it. And that's coming in as an introvert. I mean, I am not naturally skilled at navigating a crowd, so to speak.
That's still interesting that you find ways to network as an introvert. And I find it particularly interesting, this matchmaking. Is this something a company has to pay for, a consultancy, to be allowed to take part in this? Or how does it work very specifically?
So the particular organization I'm working with has their own business outreach, and their model is actually doing this particular type of work.
Makes sense.
What they generally do is they would reach out to an organization and say, hey, come along a couple times. And if you get value out of it, here's the scaling or the tiering of the business. My observation, and this may have changed to be fair, is they work to reach out to government departments and have them come along because the government departments need support from the private sector. Private sector wants to sell into the government departments. So the government departments are kind of like their Easter eggs for bringing in other people. Mm-hmm. So, I think that's an interesting model. I don't feel comfortable using names of separate organizations.
No, it's fine. You don't have to name names. The concept is fine enough. That's cool. Let me see what next topics we target. Yeah, we already talked about the whole topic of building and growing client relationships and mm-hmm. that you have the mindset of basically making yourself redundant by delivering good mm-hmm. work and not being the kind of consultant that does a learn and expand approach and always mm-hmm. tries to I wouldn't say manufacturer, but tries to squeeze himself into new areas. So, can you give me a hands-on example where you were still able, after delivering a good work, to maintain a relationship that later on expanded into new work?
Sure. So I can use this is an example with BetterGov before my time, but it's a very good example to use. So their main approach as BetterGov is to go in and deliver whatever the context excellently, but their extra capability they bring to the table is they upskill. So for the sake of argument, the client isn't particularly strong at user research as part of a GDS aligned agile delivery. So bringing the user research in, helping the client understand why user research is important, and then helping them to bring those types of capabilities into the business or into the department, and training those people and helping to build their ecosystem of DDAC capability. So that's one thing that they do as part of their upskilling. The other part of this is they want to make sure that as you're delivering a final project coming out of public beta, usually that goes back to the client or the government or the government department organization. We make a conscious effort to bring the client organization, the government organization, left, so that we have the opportunity to work with the engineers directly way before they actually are supporting the product. Mm-hmm. So early on, they come in as part of the delivery team. They are adjunct and treated exactly the same way. And as a result, they have that knowledge going in once there's actual full handover. So what that's done then is you've got a large Venn diagram going into support. We'll go to the right, they'll come to the left, and there's a good solid handover. But as a result of both of those things, there's the very clear intent of creating an environment where the client doesn't need us. And by extension, we have a very clear line of sight to say these guys are honest, trustworthy. And in the case I'm thinking of, three different projects, if I recall, came out on the back of that exact approach, which they then replicated. So again, that's one of the reasons I'm aligning myself specifically with an organization like BetterGov.
Very cool. And so on the one hand, just one short follow-up question, then one specific one to the topic we just talked about. The follow-up question, do you already pitch that your goal is to make yourself redundant? So is it part of your secret sauce, so to say?
Yes, that is very much part of our go-to-market.
Okay.
Right. So it's the trusted partnership, capable humans who know their stuff, and the intent of making yourselves redundant. That's the secret sauce. There's lots of people who do cloud, there's lots of people who do cyber, et cetera, et cetera. But are they doing it with a genuine intent to service the end user? And that's where our main focus is. Mm-hmm.
And that's a special capability that you have to build up. I mean, to upskill your client, just showing that you're able to do that, that already differentiates you. I mean, I was a consultant when I started working for a couple of years. And I can tell you that was not the normal mindset. No. The mindset was, no, you have to find new problems and take everything over from the client so that they need you more. And so I didn't like it and had a bad gut feeling out of that one.
Yep.
So I understand.
Can I actually pick up on that, Sammy?
Sure.
So I was working, this is years before my time in the public sector, but I was working for a large system integrator into a tier one telco. And the system integrator wanted us to take over the ecosystem, which included an enterprise architecture. And I actually didn't make myself very popular with my paymasters, but I told the client, do not give away your enterprise architects, because if you do that, you're immediately beholden forever to this particular organization. So I think it's really important that client organizations keep key capability, and anytime an SI or consulting organization tries to take away a key capability, then you need to have a big red flag because you still, as a business, need to be able to own your own destiny and very often by intent or accident, that capability goes away, and then you, become beholden, which I think is an exceptionally unhealthy relationship that's developed between clients and consulting organizations over time.
Yeah, and that's maybe also where the bad reputation of consulting companies come from.
Agreed.
And so you, sticking to this example, you did a good job, you made yourself redundant. How did the next project basically happen? Because is it always like you have to attend an RFP, or is there something where you know there will be an RFP, you already have a good relationship, you get some inside knowledge? How does it work that, so that you have a better chance of winning the next one?
So in the context of UK government and the frameworks, there's a couple of routes. One is a new RFP comes through. I'm in pole position because I've got all the client relationships and I know how to get the capability, deliver what they're looking for. So there's no guarantees ever, of course, but being in pole position makes it really harder, much harder for competitors to dislodge you. And in our case, if we know someone is in pole position, often we'll pull out because it's just not worth the investment, knowing that our likelihood of winning is considerably lower because there's an excellent partner already engaged. The other aspect to that is, in the context of UK government, there is a G-Cloud context. And the way a G-Cloud works is your business is already on the framework, and you've got a certain set of capabilities tagged to your name. So, for example, cloud, cyber, agile delivery, as an example. And you can actually help the client develop keyword searches that basically pop you. And if you're the only organization that meet their keyword requirements for a particular piece of work, they can give that to you directly.
Awesome.
So, which goes back to why you must have your client relationships in a solid place. Because then that gets away from the RFP. You can actually just help the client go on and on and on. And that's one of those adjunct values that come out of being a trusted partner. It's, again, not with the intent of pulling more work through, but the client knowing that I don't want to fall on my face. These are the people that are going to help me do that. And then you can just, and that work carries on.
Mm-hmm. And now the interesting flip side of what you said before, where you say you shouldn't, on the one hand, from the client's perspective, you shouldn't give away key capabilities. Mm-hmm. But the flip side would be you could give away non-key capabilities where you are not efficient and someone else could basically do it much, much better. And I see more and more now that consulting companies who see the same problem again and again of non-key capabilities of a client, be it governmental or non-governmental, and mm-hmm. they just found a really efficient way to execute. It's basically a repeating or recurring revenue business that they build on the side where they have continuous engagement. It's not even the revenue that is a major upside. It's the continued relationship that you have with the client organization. Do you see something similar sometimes happening in the government aspect?
Well, it's exactly, I mean, what you described is exactly what I'm talking about. So you want to keep enterprise architecture, frankly, regardless. And that kind of key capability that understands what's going on in that wider ecosystem. And I will comment for a second that many of the viewers will have a problem with the phrase enterprise architecture. So give me a little bit of leeway on that. I think you understand the direction we're going, because enterprise architecture as a term is a bit old school. So keep key capabilities, but often if you need to stand up a delivery team, that's cross-functional, that includes user research, product management, delivery, et cetera, et cetera. Why would you do that for a spot piece of work that you may not need to do anything with in the future, or that you can then build a smaller team on the back of in a successful delivery? It doesn't make sense. Now, that's one piece of it. And the other part of it, especially in the central government context, is they are so lacking in core DDAT capability that they're actually dependent, more increasingly dependent upon client organizations, partner organizations, in that context. So organizations like BetterGov, who are there to actually support and deliver, but all the way up to the enterprises, there is an increasing reliance upon, although that's not intentional, because they do want to build their own capability, but increasing reliance upon partners from that perspective. And these partners know where they play and how to do that.
Why did you finally decide to work with BetterGov, knowing that you have certain values where you want to provide value to the end user, which is basically the people of your country, and you don't want to basically just do a land and expand strategy within a client, but you want to make yourself redundant as a consultancy. So it makes a lot of things harder. You cannot work for any kind of consultancy. Why did you choose BetterGov in the end?
So you've already alluded to it as part of the values alignment. So I am focused on service and on giving back. I am very concerned, especially as we move into more and more of digital era, that everybody has access to the right tools, right technology, and right products to help them be successful in essentially running their lives. So I'll go back to my example of the individual on benefits. I know that's hard. I know that's a difficult, challenging experience that person's going through. And there's no reason that process of getting support should be difficult. That is helping that individual to have a less stressful life. And my argument would be, because a lot of that stress is less, they're being more effective in their personal environment, for example. So the other aspect of that for me is I'm really focused on a wider environment, sustainability, and governance, in addition to the social piece. So any organization, and BetterGov is a good example of this, that is really focusing on solving real problems is a place I want to align myself to.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Now we are already at the end of our conversation, David, and I have 5 rapid-fire questions lined up for you. Are you ready? Okay.
Please, go for it.
What do you do to keep body and mind fit and sharp?
So I regularly meditate. Mm-hmm. So I try to get up in the morning 15 minutes before I need to start my day and sit through the fog of sleep and kind of get my day ready. I've also started using a product called MindLift, MindLift, that uses the Muse headband, which is a neurofeedback device. Mm. And I use that because that really helps you get access to understand what's going on in the brainwaves and then adjust those accordingly. And I find that over time, that helps me to be more balanced and focused. So the meditation and the direct neurofeedback are my focus.
Very cool.
In addition to taking my dogs out for a walk every day for an hour, just to clear my head and give them a runabout.
So I will have a look into that one. I'm always curious about getting data on like what impact does my behavior have. And I have a new watch, like a Garmin, and it measures, for example, heart rate variability. I don't even know if it's super accurate or not. But I found a correlation between some things I do and a positive impact on my heart rate variability. And and it's super interesting to see how you can make some changes. I mean, not my whole life is dependent on data, but I'm curious. I will have a look. Thanks for sharing that one.
So I also use an Oura ring, which is really focused on sleep, but it's also HRV tracking, body temperature, things like that. So I am a bit of a technology geek, especially on the mind and body hacking side.
Very cool. Do you have a favorite business book, David?
So there's a book called Joy Inc. that I particularly enjoy. I think it's Richard Sheridan. You can probably see it behind me in the back, the yellow book there. And the reason that is it's an organization that was really focusing on making their place of work a fully joyful, fully human experience. And the techniques that they did in order to help to create that environment. There's another book called, I believe it's called Holacracy, which is taking the agile mentality to the nth level on the enterprise side, which again looks at the whole person and how the whole person works with whole teams and whole organizations and how all those things to get moved together. And if done right with the right types of people who have the same intent, you don't actually need leadership. It becomes a very organic type of environment, which I find that particularly exciting. And that is the direction I try to move my organizations as I'm working towards. If I make myself redundant, then I will have done my job properly. It's the same kind of concept.
I recently had Rasmus Frick from NetCentric Cognizant. So it's a company that was bought by Cognizant, but originally German-based company, or mainly in Germany operating company, that is using Holacracy as their operating model. And they are now at over 1,000 employees, 1,500, I think.
Wow.
And it's still working. I mean, they started much earlier. And you also said you should start earlier, not too late. So I think they started 80 or so employees. But it's working. So I was surprised and I'm curious. So I'm digging deep into this whole topic.
Keep an eye on it. It's interesting, though. I mean, if there's an organization that's bought by another organization that is not like that, and I know Cognizant because I've come from that environment, and how those cultures are going to mix and potentially clash over time. Yeah. So that'd be an interesting thing to watch in relationship to the holocratic environment being purchased by a non-holocratic environment.
So in this case, I like Rasmus basically said that Cognizant learned over time that they have to let their acquisitions stay as independent as possible, align, of course, so that you get value out of the bigger picture, but they let them operate how they operated all the time. And I mean, there's a little bit of friction where you have more touch points, but they figure them out and it seems to work. I mean, they were 100 people when they joined and now they're 1,500. So somehow...
Wow, something's working.
Something is...
That's interesting. I'll check that out. That's very interesting.
Yeah. And next question. Do you have a favorite IT tool that you use for yourself or your practice? That is maybe not something like Zoom or everything everyone else is using, but say that made a positive impact.
So I enjoy the work, the tools of both Miro and Monday.com. So Miro, from the point of view of having a fully web-based tool that lets you whiteboard and do agile types of engagements in a purely online context. So I like that. And then Monday.com is actually a pretty good replacement for traditional other agile or project management tools. Very good Kanban and Scrum boards, but as well as having traditional MSP tools as necessary.
Very good. We link to everything. So the book and the tools that you mentioned, we will put all the links into our show notes. So now you can directly address our audience, so other leaders of consulting companies. Is there anything we can help you with?
So I'm moving more and more towards portfolio career. The engagement that I have with PetterGov is at the moment fractional, and that's by design. So I'm helping the organization and providing a lot of the strategic leadership that they need, but they also don't need me full-time at this point in the size they are as an organization. So the model works for them, works for me. If I could have another one of those for 2 or 3 days a week, that would be ideal. And whether that's in a CDIO context or in a transformational role context, my pedigree tends to be start, fix, stop. I'm not very good at the middle bits. So you bring me on to fix something and then I hand it back, as I was kind of alluding to, and just the way the BetterGov itself works. So, and as part of moving towards a portfolio career, I'm also doing several NED types of engagements with ESG-specific firms. So I'm looking at how do I get back? What are the things that we can do to change the world? And that, to that latter point, I'm intentionally moving into the space industry over time, because I think a lot of the terrestrial problems we have can be solved directly or indirectly through the space of one form or another, especially the data that's coming out. So that's kind of where I'm at as a person. But keep in mind, my main focus is giving back in service. So that's where I'm coming from as a person.
Perfect. And how could someone who wants to talk to you reach out to you best?
So the best way to get a hold of me is via LinkedIn, frankly. And I'm sure my LinkedIn profile will be as part of the transcript.
Yeah, perfect. That's it. Thanks a lot for being our guest, David.
Brilliant. That's wonderful. Thank you so much, Sammy.
That's it for now. Thanks for listening. Subscribe to our monthly newsletter at leadersinconsulting.com to get key takeaways from this podcast delivered straight to your inbox. And to learn more about how you can join our community of consultancy leaders from around the world. You'd really make my day if you left us a review and subscribe to the podcast on Apple or Spotify. And who knows, maybe we can meet each other at the next Leaders in Consulting monthly meetup. Until then, have a great rest of your week. Your host, Sammy.